Dave and Ryan's movie review and action.
Everyone loves going to the movies. And while some are amazing, some are awful. Fortunately, we have Dave and Ryan, two guys with nothing better to do than watch movies of today and movies of yesterday. So get your popcorn ready, silence your phones, and relax, because the show is about to begin.
Cue Dave and Ryan in 3, 2, 1.
It's Dave and Ryan's movie review.
Sponsored by nobody.
Welcome into another exciting edition of Dave and Ryan's movie review, take 122. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah, busy week.
Yeah, busy last couple of weeks.
Yeah, no fights this week though.
Nope.
I guess you're just not doing what you love.
Just fighting with myself.
Well, that's okay. Everything else all right?
Yeah.
Are you watching anything good on TV? I want to talk about this. Are you watching anything good right now?
I've watched that new Chad Powers
okay.
series.
That's with Glenn Powell or...
Yeah, it's based off of a skit Eli Manning did.
Uh-huh.
And it's turning out to be okay.
Not too bad.
Yeah.
I've been watching Ed Gein.
Okay.
And I told everybody, I says, you know, I've read about him. I know, but nothing prepared me for what's happening in this series. It's messed up. It really and truly is messed up. If you haven't got the opportunity, Chad Powers is it on Prime?
No, it's on Hulu.
Oh, it's on Hulu.
Or Disney.
It's Disney Plus now. Yeah, they just shut down Hulu. And then you can tell it's the spooky season on Netflix because you get the Ed Gein thing, and then there's the My Dad Was the BTK, the Bind Torture.
Well, it is the season, Dave.
Yeah, it is. It is
the season of craziness.
Absolutely, it is. So, should we just go to Hollywood?
I guess.
With the rest of the crazies?
Do it.
Welcome to Hollywood Boulevard, the place of glitz, glamour, and dreams. Just kidding. This place is a dump. That's why Dave and Ryan come here each week. You get the news from Hollywood without fearing for your life on the Walk of Fame. It's This Week in Hollywood.
All right. So first up, a couple of things came out about Ocean's 11 this week. Bradley Cooper and Margot Robbie are circling a prequel to Ocean's 11. Don't know how that's going to work out yet, but that's been like talked about for a year or so.
Who are they going to be?
I don't know. I don't know if he's going to be like I don't know. That's what I said. How can you? Who's? How's this going to work?
Like he could be like I know. Like in Ocean's, what was it? 12.
Uh-huh.
They talked to Lamarck.
Yeah,
who was like a retired. So maybe it'll be like that.
Maybe some kind of a setup. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, he is. They're both circling to be in that one. I
like those movies.
The first one was good, and then the third one was really good.
The second one was okay.
It was okay, but I really liked the third one with Al Pacino. That one was really good. speaking of which, another Ocean's international news, we're going to get a 14.
Ooh.
The budget has been approved. They could begin filming in 7 to 10 months. They should start filming.
Okay.
And so far, they've talked Clooney, Julia Roberts, and Brad Pitt will be back for this one. But like I said, we're just finding this out right now.
George Clooney's character died.
Oh, he didn't die in the last one.
In the all-female cast one. She visited his grave.
Maybe they treat that one like they treat the Ghostbusters 2016.
Or Tokyo Drift.
Did it really happen?
Fast and Furious,
that's
Tokyo
right.
Drift.
So, but anyway, we've got that to look forward to. Who knows? That sounds like it. See if they're going to start filming in the middle of next year. That could be a 27 or a 28 release. So yeah, we'll keep an eye out for that one. One that's coming in 27, I know you're excited.
Don't,
the Minecraft
don't
sequel.
You si- da- no, we're skipping that.
Yeah, that is
Dave,
set.
Dave,
but here's
Dave,
the problem.
No, I don't care.
I won't.
I don't care.
I won't mention the movie.
I don't care.
I know.
What you have to say. I don't care about that crappy movie. I don't care. Let's skip it because The Simpsons movie 2 is also coming out. Let's talk about that.
The same day.
I don't care about the other movie day.
Interesting how they're going to make that work. We'll see.
Why is it interesting? Did you see the
because
first
Simpsons
movie?
Because it's both two movies that are geared towards kids.
Yeah, but who cares about the one movie?
Well, apparently other people do because it made over $1 billion.
Yeah, but it's the Simpsons movie.
Okay. I don't.
Ghost. Did you see the first Simpsons movie?
No. I'm not a big Simpsons fan.
Okay, there you go. See? Now we're not talking about either one of them.
There you go. We're moving on.
We're moving on, Dave. We're frying the chicken.
That's right. We've talked about this, I believe, on the show before. Epic, the Elvis Presley in concert movie, has been sold to Neon Distributing. So that'll go in the United States. And then Universal Pictures International will release it internationally. It's set for a 2026 date, probably sometime early in 2026.
I bet Jordan's just ecstatic about
it. I'll go to it. It's this movie looks great. If you like Elvis, if you don't know about this movie, Epic, Baz Luhrmann, when he was making the Elvis movie with Austin Butler, found all of this old footage. And he has gone back and remastered it and put it together. And it's really an Elvis concert movie.
Hmm.
And so they'll be releasing that in theaters. I think it's going to be pretty fantastic. That's just me, though. That's just me. All right. Projection for this week. We'll be talking a little bit more about Tron later on in the show. But Tron Ares released in theaters yesterday. Ryan, what do you got? Opening projection domestically, $40 to $45 million.
I'm going to say 29.
Ryan's going to say 29. I'm going to say 35. Just to make it not so prices righty.
I was going to say, don't you prices right me.
Just to make it not so prices righty, I'll say 35. All right, so box office ending 10-5. The Conjuring Last Rites comes in at number 5, $4.1 million for the week, bringing its total to $167.8 million. Gabby's Dollhouse proves that it is not Ryan's world. $5.3 million for the week, bringing its total to $21.7 million. And that comes in at number 4. Last week it was number 2. So in, 2 weeks, it's doubled what he did.
Yeah.
He doubled what it cost.
Yeah.
Not good. The Smashing Machine, we're going to hold off on that one, comes in at number 3. One Battle After Another, the previous week's number 1. That's the Leonardo DiCaprio and Benicio del Toro movie. $11 million for the week brings its total to 43.6. And out of nowhere, Taylor Swift, the official release party of a showgirl.
Okay, first of all, out of nowhere, Dave, really? The Swifties were going to come out in force.
I understand that. $34 million walks away with it. This is a historic event right here because this is the first time since the 80s that this has actually happened. And I don't know if I told you this or not.
No.
Taylor Swift had the number one movie in the country and the number one album in the country.
Ooh.
It happened in the 80s. Do you care to take a guess at who it was back then?
Let's see if it's the 80s.
Number one movie and number one album.
I'm trying to think of a singer who also made a movie. I don't think it's Madonna.
Nope.
So I'm going to
say... You are close alphabetically.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Think Purple.
Prince?
Yes. Purple Rain.
Oh.
When he released Purple Rain, he had the number one movie and the number one album in the country. And we were discussing this. I think it was Jordan that I was talking to about. I love Prince, but that wasn't really a great movie.
I don't think I've seen all of
it. It's great for the soundtrack. I will give him that, obviously. But the movie itself wasn't very good. All right, our projection last week was The Smashing Machine. Now, it was projected to do $8 to $20 million. And I picked $22 million. Ryan picked $31 million. And this movie did $6 million.
Yeah, wow.
$6 million.
It hit rock bottom.
It did. Oh. That's got to be the lowest opening weekend for a movie of his.
Yeah,
I would think.
Well, no, yeah, I was going to say Scorpion King, but that had a lot of hype to it.
Scorpion King was okay the first week, and then people saw the CGI at the end and were like, oh my God, are you kidding me?
Yeah, like, I want my money back.
Yeah, definitely. But, yeah, and he's gone on to do multiple interviews. And you know what? Good for him. People have put a microphone in front of him and asked him why he thought this movie didn't do great. And he's being totally honest with them. But I don't know. I think that maybe people aren't ready for him to be in a role like this. Does that make sense?
I haven't seen the movie, so I'm not quite sure.
Maybe people aren't ready for a serious Dwayne Johnson.
Well, yeah. Well, he's been kind of typecast as the muscle brain jock kind of character.
Action hero. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't seen it yet either. It looks good. It really and truly does.
Well, another thing is he's kind of unrecognizable in it.
He is. He truly is. But yeah, I don't know. And that brings me to another thing. And I think we've talked about this on the show previous. Who is the best wrestler turned actor? Do you think?
Best wrestler turned actor.
Yep.
Well, there's not a whole lot of them. Let's see. Hulk Hogan did it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are we talking about where they starred in their own movies or they were just in a movie?
Just in a movie or in a movie or TV or whatever.
Okay, because I know Hogan was in it. Piper has been in some. Savage was in.
Andre the Giant.
The Rock, obviously. Even Roman Reigns was in the last Hobbs and Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
Cody
Rhodes, if you want to talk the Naked Gun movie.
And then, Ronda Rousey's been in a few. Mm-hmm. She was did some.
For my money...
There's a lot.
You're forgetting one, but it's completely understandable. Because you can't see him.
Well, I was going to say that.
I think Cena's a pretty good actor.
He is a typecast actor just like The Rock.
He is.
The muscle brown, you know, type of character. You know, they basically play the same person.
Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is because I just finished the other night, and I know you're not interested, but I just finished Peacemaker Season 2.
Okay.
He's pretty good in that, and he's not just a punch your way out of stuff in this one. He's pretty decent in it.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
What was the last movie we saw with him?
He's better in Peacemaker than he is in Heads of State.
Okay.
I'll be honest. Yes, he's better. Because you do get a lot of depth of character out of him in Peacemaker.
Okay.
So, pretty good flick. Pretty good flick. All right, today we're going to be talking about The Lost Bus. This is a Matthew McConaughey movie that is on Apple TV based on a true story of the Paradise Fire in California in 2018. So we'll be discussing that as far as our review. And then we're going to talk about other movies that are true stories that became movies. You know, just a true story either came up as a book and it was just turned into a movie. And, you know, how closely they follow what really and truly happened. Because there are things like creative license, and we talk about that all the time, that, you know, it didn't necessarily happen this way, but this is what happened. So we're going to talk about that. And with Tron Ares coming out this week, we got to talk about Tron.
Yay.
So when we come back, we're going to talk The Lost Bus with Matthew McConaughey on Dave and Ryan's Movie Review.
Everyone on set, shut up. Shut up. These two buffoons are about to talk about a new release. Dave and Ryan's Movie Review, Segment 1. Action.
What's more exciting than a brand new release to the movie theater? According to Dave and Ryan, nothing. They're the first to see it, so you're the first to hear about it.
So, for the review this week, it's on Apple TV. It just came out. It's called The Lost Bus. It's rated R, 2 hours, 9 minutes long. Matthew McConaughey, America Ferrera are the two people that you'll notice in this. His son in the movie is his actual real-life son. The actor that played Sean is his son. I believe his name is Levi.
He was in the movie for, like, maybe 5 minutes.
Yes. And his mother in the movie is actually his mom. As well.
Also in the movie for less than that.
Had to give him a screen credit, though. Mm. So, Paul Greengrass directed this one. He is no stranger to real-life movies. He directed United 93. He directed Captain Phillips. So, he deals with those all the time. And then, in the producer credits, Jamie Lee Curtis is a producer on this movie, as is Jason Blum, who is the head of Blumhouse Productions, which you... This is not a Blumhouse movie by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, would producers basically all they do is just give money.
Yes, but I'm
and
just,
then they get a you know they get a portion back.
I'm just saying that it's not really anything that he's usually used to horror and thriller movies is what Blumhouse does. So, but anyway, it deals with a real life event, the 2018 Paradise Fire, where 85 people lost their lives. Because of it comes down and it boils down to Pacific Gas and Electric, or PG&E, had faulty power lines that were over a century old.
Yep.
So the movie starts out with Matthew McConaughey as a bus driver, just kind of getting his feet back underneath him, it sounds like, from a divorce. But there wasn't really, I don't know if it was a divorce or just a separation.
Well, it was a guy who was down on his luck. His father had just passed away a few months prior.
And that's why he was back where he was at.
Yeah, he was back in his hometown. He didn't want to be there. You could tell he didn't want to be there. And he was just kind of drifting through life at the time.
Yes. And so he's a school bus driver for the school district there in town. And he drops all of his kids off, goes home. And the first thing right out of the gate, the first night, he's got to put his dog down. So that's bad enough. You know, his dad has passed away, his mother is living with him, and then his son that doesn't want to be with him is there with him as well. So the next morning he gets up, and it's kind of a normal morning for them.
Yeah, and, you know, and I know, like, with movies, they take some liberties, you know, artistic liberties. So I'm just wondering how much of that is actually true.
Everything that I looked up, it didn't touch on any of those.
Because in the movie, yes, his dog got put down, but you really didn't. You don't. You know, you have no emotional connection to that dog.
Right. Right.
Besides, it's a dog being put down.
Like it was just added in to pile on top of everything.
Yeah,
else.
And then you know he had an argument with his son the first night. But honestly, you don't know their relationship. You don't know. You get the sense that you know they're estranged because of the divorce or whatever is going on, the separation. And he doesn't want to be there. But other than that, you don't know anything about the father. Why does this kid not like his father? You don't get any of that. It's just kind of it's kind of like they jumped in the deep end and you don't know why.
It throws you just right into it, really.
Yeah. This guy's just, everything's gone bad for him. And then things just keep piling on. And then something bad happens and he redeems himself. But, you know, you don't really know, you know. Yes, it's sad what happened with the fire and all that, but it just kind of makes me wonder why he deserved his own movie.
Well, it was based on a book, and sometimes the books are good.
Oh, okay. I did not know it was based off of a book.
Yes, it's based on a book.
Because I can't read.
That's right. But it's based on a book, and the in fact, she was the one, she was...
Did she write the book?
No. The lady that wrote the book was in charge of the screenplay, and she was also given a producer credit, I believe, if I can remember right in seeing that.
Was she part of the movie?
No.
Was she in the movie at all?
No. Nope.
Well, then how does she know all this stuff?
It's called research.
It's called money grabbing.
It's called research. You find out what you can. And so anyway, turns out that all hell has broken loose in this town when the fire gets going and it gets ramped up and it happens really, really quick.
Yeah, well, the fire starts in one location and then it pops up like 8 miles away in another location and then it pops up in another location and they finally figure out it's the power lines and the power lines go in like this big giant circle encompassing like two towns and that's when they're like, you know, we can't fight this fire, just get everyone out, save lives.
Yeah, so they asked probably within the first 15-20 minutes when the fire gets going, they're talking to PG&E and like, you've got to turn off the power, you've got to turn off the power. And like within the next, probably in movie time, you know, within the next 3 or 4 hours, they still haven't done it.
Yeah.
So that's why a lot of this, well, the whole thing falls on Pacific Gas and Electric. And they had to pay out quite a sum of money to people who lost their homes and lost their lives. And
the movie, you know, the movie really didn't...
It doesn't dive into that too much.
No, like, at the beginning, you get the two workers who show up to the, I guess, the mobile command center. And like, you got to turn the power on. And it's just two workers that, you know, they don't own the company. They... You know, they can relay your message, but that's about it.
They're really outdoing what they're told.
Yeah, and he, you know, I understand the fire chief was mad, But it's not their fault. No. They just work there. Mm-hmm. It was like, it'd be just like someone yelling at one of the firefighters for something that they have no power over. And then you really don't hear about them until later on in the movie when, I guess, an executive showed up.
Yes.
And he's yelling at him because, you know, the power lines are still not turned off. And, you know, he's got firefighters out there cutting power lines. People are, you know, running over power lines. And, you know, it's just that's the only really part until the very end of the movie when the end credits are coming up where you read that, you know, they went to court and they lost millions of dollars. They got charged with, it was 84 counts of manslaughter that they plead guilty to, and they had to pay all this money out. And then I guess you said they filed for bankruptcy?
They filed for bankruptcy after it, yeah.
Yeah, but other than that, there's no blame pointing. There's not saying, hey, you are the bad guy.
Right. And that can either be a positive or a negative.
Yeah.
Because what it really focuses on is the kids and the town.
Yeah. Is that company still...
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's still around.
It's still around? Okay.
He has to go pick up these kids at this school. They're supposed to take them to another school. And when they get there, there's nobody there.
It's on fire.
They had to get evacuated to another area. So then they figure out this is where we've got to go. And that's really when the meat of the movie starts, is when they're like, okay, we've got to get, I think he said to Chico. We've got to get to Chico now. And that's where the whole movie starts. And it is. It's just like you would think it is. It's utter chaos. It truly is. It's bumper to bumper traffic. It's people that are just, there was actually one scene and you kind of wonder if that really happened, and I couldn't see anywhere that it did or it didn't. But when the people started coming up to them with guns and wanting on the bus. And,
why would that confused me. Why would they want to get on the bus?
Yeah.
It's a big bus. And if they have a vehicle that's smaller, they can weave in between traffic.
Right.
Why would they get on the bus?
Because they wanted the bus, period, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, there's scenes in this movie, which, of course, they're given a little bit of creative licensing. There's a scene, as I said, that there was not a lot of dodging through fire and, you know, like the going back and forth and high speeds and all that stuff like that. Really, if you look back, everybody is saying that this bus was really just stuck in traffic.
Yeah.
With everybody else trying to get out of town.
Yeah, you know, there was bad cell service and the fire was kind of disturbing the CB radio. So, yeah, I can see they were just stuck in traffic. And the way they had it is they ventured off the road through this park, this mobile park, and they went to go find water, and then, like, looters showed up.
Yeah, there was no looting.
And they kind of just, like, jump-skipped over that because... Ferrara was out there looking for water. She found water, and then when she was coming back, you see, I don't know if it was the same person with the gun.
Yeah, I don't know.
But you see, like, a few people, like, walking around up the stuff with a gun, and she just kind of ducks her head and starts walking, and then next thing you know, she's back at the bus. It just kind of, like, jump-skipped over that. You look at her, and she looks horrified.
Mm-hmm.
But it never explained what happened, but I guess you said that never happened.
There were no looters.
Yeah. So they seemed like they took a lot of liberties and kind of exaggerated a few things, added things, you know, for the story, which they're allowed to do.
And as you said, the cell phone service and everything like that, it makes it out that there is no radio communication at all. No cell service, no nothing. There was limited cell service while this was going on.
This whole thing takes place in, like, paradise,
uh-huh.
And it's basically like a bunch of canyons. It's up in the mountains, so it's basically like us being up Highway 6 or Indian Canyon. Right. You know, there's hardly any service out there
on a good day.
Yeah,
let alone when there's a fire. Also on the bus, there were two teachers, but one teacher did not want to be a part of the movie, so they did not. They kind of combined her and Ferrara's character together.
Okay.
There were two teachers on the bus, as far as that is concerned. And the other thing that I told you is that the director didn't want anything to do with making the kids relive it. So as far as what...
That's getting understandable.
Things, it is actual, absolutely.
And the movie, the way they had this movie, it's not about the kids. The kids are just there being led, you know, Matthew McConaughey and for our, or the shepherds, and the kids are just a sheep following along. Yes. And all that you need to really do is just film their reactions.
Yes. And then another thing, and we kind of hit on that a little bit, it kind of downplayed the broader context of the movie and or the fire itself and the cause of it. Because, yeah, it doesn't really say much about PG&E until the very end. But this was a fire that covered over 140,000 acres, and it killed 85 people.
Yeah.
So, but it is on Apple TV. It was released in theaters in late September, so it can, you know, be offered up for awards consideration.
Like, the special effects in this movie were amazing.
They were. They're
the
great.
The fire scenes and all that was just on point.
Yeah, one of the ladies that works here at the radio station was, she says, I was so anxious the whole movie. And I can see that. If you have anxiety issues, it's gonna crank them up a little bit. There were scenes in this that do that to you because of the special effects that were used in this movie. Yeah. I liked the movie. I really did. I'm going to probably give this one 4 out of 5 buckets. I really liked it. I liked McConaughey in it. It was nice to see America Ferrera in something like this. And I would probably watch it again just to kind of see if I could pick up on anything else. But it was a good flick.
I will agree. It was a good one. I'm not going to say it was amazing or super duper super fantastic. I'm going to give this one a 3.
A 3. Yeah. All right. So when we come back, this is a movie that was based on real events, and we've talked about a couple of them recently. Just last week we talked about Remember the Titans. So there was this one and then Remember the Titans. So we'll come back and we'll talk about some other movies that were based on real events when we come back on Dave and Ryan's Movie Review.
Hey, idiots. We're back from commercial. Dave and Ryan's Movie Review, Segment 2, and action.
Welcome back to Dave and Ryan's Movie Review. We just got done talking about the new movie, The Lost Bus, which is based on a true story.
Loosely.
Loosey-goosey. We have some other ones here that are movies that are based on true stories.
Loosely.
And one of them is very loosely.
Loosey-goosey.
Every time we talk about movies that are based on a true story, Jordan goes off on this movie. So we've saved it till last. The first one up is The Blind Side. Came out in 2009, PG-13. Sandra Bullock, Tim McGraw is in this one. Lily Collins is in this one as the sister, and a smattering of college football coaches in this one.
Yeah.
Deals with Michael Orr, who was, in the movie, made out to be a destitute, basically almost homeless type person that was just wandering the streets, and Sandra Bullock picks him up and takes him home. And they kind of take him and let him live with them. He plays football, and there's a lot of inaccuracies in the movie itself, but it's basically them bringing him in and giving him everything that all the tools that he needs to be successful in the educational and the football side of his career. In the movie, it's made out to be like he knew nothing of football. But in reality, he was actually quite an athlete.
Yeah, this movie, when I saw it, I was like, yeah, there's something not right about this movie. The whole fact where he's being saved and being taught football, it doesn't seem, you know. This place takes place in Tennessee, if I remember?
Is it Tennessee? Because that's where he ends up playing at Ole Miss.
So it does
south. Because he, funny story, the character that is Tim McGraw was actually the announcer for the Memphis Grizzlies.
Okay.
So that was one of his, you know, it takes place in Tennessee.
It just seemed a little too fake, and obviously it was.
Yes. Once again, he was actually being recruited by D1 schools. So he was not a slouch on the football field. He'd played multiple sports. He wasn't the helpless person when it came to his education either. He was actually very smart.
Yeah, a guy his size, he knows how to play a sport. It's either basketball or football. He knows, he's going to be athletic. He's not just going to be some shut-in like they kind of made him out to be.
Right. And the other thing...
You don't go to the NFL being a shut-in.
No. And he did play for... He was drafted by the Baltimore Ravens. Yep. And played for the Baltimore Ravens. The other part of it, too, that and it kind of came out a couple years ago, is it kind of sets up that they wanted to adopt him in the movie. Because he goes and signs... They want him to adopt him, and that's when the NCAA gets involved.
Yeah.
And because they think that they went out, got him... brought him into their home to let him go to, you know, Ole Miss.
Yeah, they basically got him to groom him to go to,
because, the school because that they all graduated were, from.
Yeah, they were big boosters.
Yeah. And so what really happened was he was never adopted by them, but he was placed under a conservatorship after he turned 18. That means that any money that he had coming in after he turned 18 would go to them first. And so the judge, he took it to a judge, and the judge terminated the conservatorship in 2023. So the adoption part of the movie was not real at all.
They're just raking in the money. You know, they're supposed to be caring and all, but no, they're just, in the end, they were just in it for the money.
And they had money to start with.
Yeah, you know, if this kid or came from, you know, the streets, came from nothing, bad childhood, you know, once he turned 18, let him have his money.
Yeah, and the other part of it too is,
or at least when he's in the NFL, for gosh sake.
Funny side note, my wife has started watching, I don't know if you've ever, if you're familiar with the movie or with the TV show, the reality show Below Deck, about the cruise ship. One of the episodes that we watched, these two were on it.
Really?
The Tuies were on it. So but anyway, it got an Oscar win for Sandra Bullock. So, congratulations. That one, of all of these movies that we're going to talk about, you got to rent all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't find them like on any streaming service, anywhere that you could get it for free to watch. So, you got to rent all of these. That's the first one, was The Blind Side. And it's actually a pretty good movie. And then you find this stuff out.
Yeah.
So, the next one up, another really good movie, Argo.
Well, the last one was okay.
Well, Argo was a really good movie.
Yes. Okay. The Blind Side, not so much.
Okay. It came out in 2012, rated R. Once again, you've got to rent this one. Stars Ben Affleck, Bryan Cranston, Rory Cochrane, and John Goodman. And it's all about a undercover Hollywood producer scouting locations for a science fiction film, and a CIA agent. They're trying to get hostages out of Tehran in 1979. And they get into Tehran because they're looking for, they say they're looking for locations.
They fake a film production company.
And create this. When I looked, the only thing I could find was the scene at the airport was a little bit dramatized just for effect.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was pretty close to what they had to say.
Yeah.
Three Oscar wins for this one: adapted screenplay, film editing, and best picture.
So a fun fact about this movie, and I've said this before on the show, that the whole cast of this movie, of Argo, was actually cast in another film that was Kevin Smith's film,
okay.
Red State. It's about like a religious crazy nut job.
Mm-hmm.
But Ben Affleck was working on that with Kevin, and he was like, oh, well, who's in your movie? Oh, this person, Bryan Cranston. Oh, Rory. Oh, John Goodman. And that's basically how everyone got cast in Argo.
It's through the movie Red State.
Because Ben Affleck was on set with, not Kevin James.
Kevin Smith.
Kevin Smith for his movie. He was like, oh, wow, these guys are really good.
And Ben Affleck actually even directed that one.
Yeah, starred and directed.
So he got part of the best picture.
I believe this was one of his first ones.
Could have been. But he got an Oscar for directing because he was a producer on it. So best picture.
Could you imagine if he got Oscar for acting and directing?
I don't think that's ever happened to anyone.
I don't know if it has, but that would be
amazing.
So funny.
That'd be amazing. Be like, oh, come on, man!
I just had to believe in myself, and it worked.
That's right. When no one else believed, I did.
I believed.
That's right.
I was like, you can do this, Ryan.
Who do you think
Cry
you are?
Cry more.
Who do you think you are? I am. That's right. The next one on our list, 1990s Goodfellas, rated R. This one is another rental. Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, Paul Sorvino, Lorraine Bracco, and Ray Liotta. It's about gangster Henry Hill and his start and growing and working his way up in the ranks of the mafia. And everybody that they talked to about this movie said that it was pretty spot on.
Yeah, so I was in Vegas just last month. No, yeah, last month. And we went to the Mob Museum there on downtown. And they had a special guest who was speaking, who was actually one of the consultants for the Goodfellas. And he says, everything about it is true. He knew Joe Pesci's character personally before, you know, he passed before he died in the movie.
and that's what I said. Everybody that it was even mob guys that are saying, hey, this is the way it works. This is real.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're a funny guy.
Funny how?
How am I funny to you? This is a really good movie.
I love this movie. Casino and The Godfather, all three classic mobster movies.
Yes, they're great movies. This one's fantastic.
And then there's even another one that you don't have on the list. That's kind of the one that had Denzel. No, not Denzel. It had Johnny Depp in it.
Brasco, Donnie Brasco.
I don't know if it was Donnie Brasco.
Or was it the one where he was? What is it?
I think it had Russell Crowe in it, or maybe am I getting? I might be getting two different movies mixed together. But the one, I think it was American Dream or something like that.
Okay, I remember hearing that one.
Yeah, I know Russell Crowe was in. I don't know if it was Johnny Depp. No, Johnny Depp was in like an older like mafia gangster type one.
Yeah,
and I think it was Denzel Washington that was in
American Dream.
Yeah, with it. Yeah.
Yep, know that.
That's also based off of a true story.
Most mob movies are, when you think about it, loosely somewhere in there. And the final
mobs are good.
That's right.
The mobs.
And the final movie, the one that, you know, gets ripped to shreds around the station. We should have had Jordan come in and sit on this one. Rudy, 1993, rated PG. Sean Astin, Ned Beatty, and Jon Favreau. There's a lot of inaccuracies with this one. Jordan's actually interviewed Rudy before.
Yeah.
And he said in an interview, 98% was correct. When he interviewed Jordan, he told Jordan about 95% of the movie is correct. And there are a few things. Dan Devine was going to sue the production. Dan Devine was the head coach that was so rude, so mean to him. He was the
new coach that took over.
Yeah, yeah. But he was very mean to him in the movie, and that couldn't be even, that's like the furthest thing from the truth. Dan Devine was a huge supporter of him. The scene where all the players come in and put their jerseys on the desk never happened. Never happened. In fact,
his tackle in the movie never happened either.
It did. That did happen, yes. But there's some inaccuracies with the game itself and who they played and all those things. But yeah, Dan Devine was going to sue the production of the movie.
Did everyone in the stadium chant Rudy?
No. No, and Joe Montana was a freshman when he was a senior.
Okay.
And he played in that game that they carried him off the field. And he said it was most of the players that did it as like a joke. But yeah, it was the last opportunity that he had to play. The other thing about the movie, too, that's kind of strange is it talks about his financial hardship. He had to work. He had trouble making ends meet when it came to his tuition and everything.
Most college students do.
Yeah. He was retired from the Navy. So the GI Bill paid for his school.
Really? I did not know that.
Yes. He was a boxer in the Navy. So the GI Bill would have paid for that. His parents were very supportive. He never had a brother named Frank.
Really?
Yeah, they created...
Was he an only child?
No. He had sisters, and he had younger brothers, but he never had an older brother named Frank. And they said that they created that character, the brother Frank, as kind of a combination of everybody that told him he couldn't do this, that he couldn't do it. And so
who
they created
this movie?
I'm not sure the guy's name.
Was it Rudy?
We got one more. Fortune, Charles S. Dutton. The groundskeeper that gave him the job and gave him a place to stay never existed. He was created. Uh-huh. So, I mean, Yeah, there are movies that are fantastic that are based on true stories.
Like, I didn't care much for Rudy just because I don't like Sean Astin.
Yeah.
I think he is a horrible person. He lucked out on a few things, and I don't know why people like him so much. Yes, he was Sam, but come on. He's a one-trick pony.
Goonies?
No one cares about him in Goonies.
You saying that about him is just as bad as me, you know, saying that I didn't like Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Those are two separate things.
Uh-huh.
One's an actor, the other one's a classic.
Okay. Goonies is a classic, too, by the way. Come on now.
Yeah, but Sean Astin's not.
Okay. Fair enough. That's fair.
So you didn't say you didn't like Tim Curry.
No, Tim Curry's the best thing about that movie.
That would be similar.
Oh, Tim Curry's the best thing about that movie.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, yeah, just, you know what? If you watch a movie and it says it's based on a true story, do a little research, find out what you can about it.
It might be not true.
Might be, might not be. You never can tell. The other part, too, and it's on Netflix right now. I've been watching it, the Ed Gein monster. You know, Ed Gein was a horrific human being for what he did, but they based three huge movies off of him. Psycho is based on Ed Gein. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre is based on Ed Gein. And so is The Silence of the Lambs.
Wow.
So for everything that that guy did, they got three great horror movie classics out of it. So check it out. Check these out. When we come back, Tron Ares hit theaters Friday. So we're going to go back and talk about the Tron series. You got a couple of movies. There was an animated cartoon and a series. So we'll talk about all of them. That's coming up here on Dave and Ryan's Movie Review.
All right, imbeciles. Everyone quiet down. Dave and Ryan's Movie Review, segment 3, and action.
So with Tron Ares releasing in theaters this week, we thought it would be pretty cool to take a moment and talk about the films that came before. And this all goes back to 1982. And the movie itself was just Tron. Now, this stars Jeff Bridges, Bruce Boxleitner, and David Warner, Cindy Morgan. Barnard Hughes was in this one. And this movie, at the time, and you've talked about it in the past, this movie at the time was a technical just marvel, wasn't it? With what they did with this movie at the time.
I wouldn't say technical. This is a great example of less is more.
Yes.
They did get a Oscar nomination. I don't remember if they won or not, for costume design, which was basically their costumes were burlap sack with little glowy paint on it, and they used a black light to make it pop. That was their costumes, and they were nominated for an Oscar for it. So this was also in the 80s, so, you know, they didn't have, like, a lot of special effects. They did a lot of miniature things with, like, kind of like how they did with Star Wars, little miniatures moving around. But with this one, it was a lot easier because the little floating brick things were a lot easier to hide the strings because it was all basically black with glowy paint.
So here's the story. The Academy refused to nominate Tron for special effects.
Yes.
Because as the director puts it, the Academy thought we cheated by using computers, which nowadays. It was actually nominated for Best Costume Design and Best Sound Design.
Yeah, Tron has always been linked to very good sound and music, because it's got that, you know, electronic type of feel with video games. Even the second movie that came out, Tron Legacy? The soundtrack, it was Daft Punk, I believe, which they're very big in the kind of like video game / like adult type of cartoons and stuff like that. And it worked. And now with the new Nine Inch Nails soundtrack, it's going to be just as big. I believe Jordan was telling me that they even changed the music at the ride.
They did. They rebranded the ride for the movie release, because in everyday use, it's that blue color, the ride is. But for this one, they redid the whole thing in red, and they're pumped in the soundtrack that's done by Nine Inch Nails. Nice. So,
so they were doing, you know, blue versus red, just like Star Wars. And
so,
now they're both owned by Disney.
So then we jump forward to, I believe it's 2010, and the movie you were just talking about, Tron Legacy, is released. Now, this one was directed by Joseph Kosinski, who directed Top Gun Maverick, and he also directed F1.
They also did a an animated series, which was very hard to find.
It was. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Like, I haven't even seen it.
Let's see. The film, once again, was nominated for Best Sound.
Yep.
And it didn't win, obviously. Yeah. But the funny thing about it is, when it was released, even in 2010, you would think that they would wait a few years to make that kind of a statement, because the original Tron has kind of become a cult classic.
Oh, yeah.
And they're saying that, they said that the minute that Tron Legacy was released, it became a cult classic, which is strange to me, but okay.
And who was saying that?
It came out, a lot of the critics and stuff said that this will be a cult classic, like the original Tron was. But, you know, you get Jeff Bridges in the second one, Bruce Boxleitner is back, they add Michael Sheen, and Garrett Hedlund plays Jeff Bridges' son, who gets sucked into the video game this time.
I wouldn't call it a cult classic, but, you know, it had its place.
It has a niche.
It was good to see Jeff Bridges back again, and the ending scene where he brings him, basically his video game self, back into himself, and he kind of explodes, self-sacrifice style. You know, it was, you know, a little tear-jerking. And then, but he's, I don't know if in the trailers it looks like he's back, but that could also be like the video adaptation.
It could be. Of course, in Tron Ares, like I said, that just released yesterday, Jared Leto was in this one, and it's already taking a lot of heat just for him being in it.
Yeah, I don't know why people dog on him so
bad. I don't either.
He's a decent actor.
Yep, Evan Peters is in this one. Jodie Turner-Smith, Hasan Minhaj. You get Gillian Anderson in this one.
Ooh.
And Jeff Bridges is listed in the credits as being in it. So get out there and have some fun. The other two movies you can find, they are on Disney Plus.
Yes.
You can watch both of them right now. Be a good weekend to do it. I wouldn't go outside if I didn't have to, right? All right, so that's going to do it for us. We're going to call it a week. Ryan, enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Oh, I will.
And have fun. Be safe. Be careful.
Don't tell me what to do, Dave.
Call me if you need bail money.
No.
Okay, you're on your own then. And until next time, go see a movie.
And that brings us to the end of this week's journey. But don't worry, Dave and Ryan have more movies to watch and more opinions to spew next week. You can relive today's episode at CastleCountryRadio.com. Thanks for joining us on Ryan and Dave's Movie Review.
Ah, the hell with it. Send it in, we're done. See you next week.